All right, so I'm joined by John Lamoureux of the Hustle Podcast. Have you only been on the show? Was it only for the Def Leppard episode? Is that the only one we've done together? Or
The only one you've bothered to invite me.
So I'm talking to you today for this special No Shame episode, and you have picked your two most embarrassing songs that you like. Correct?
Yes.
All right.
Okay. So let me. You ready?
Yeah,
so
I'm ready.
Tell you my thinking on this.
Yeah.
Okay, let me tell you my thinking on this. First of all, as you've established, I have no shame about anything I like, as evidenced by some of the people that I have on the show, on my show, The Hustle, because I really feel like in a lot of ways I sort of am validating some of these more obscure pop artists' career by wanting to go deep on them, you know? So I like all kinds of things, and I like them without irony, and I'm proud that I like them. And I have no problem with it. So my thinking on this was, what would BJ and his audience think that I should feel shame about? You know? Yeah. Okay, so I'm pulling two songs by the same artist, and they are by Yanni.
All right.
Okay.
There you go.
Yanni. Yes. Yeah, going with Yanni.
Have you tried to get Yanni on The Hustle?
I have not. I wouldn't say
he had like a new wave band or something, didn't he?
I don't know.
He was in
a
band.
I'm not actually. Was he?
Yeah, he was in a band. I forget what it was called, but he was. You should try to get him on the show.
I should. Yeah. I haven't heard. I don't necessarily follow Yanni's career. I don't know what he's been doing. I don't know that much about him. So, yeah, I couldn't tell you much about, you know, his life as a new waver or anything like that. I didn't know that. But I went through a brief Yanni period. And
brief Yanni period.
I did.
Was that was it right after your Kenny G?
No. No, I...
My John Tesh period.
Okay, now, John Tesh plays into this.
All right, okay? All right.
I actually own a John Tesh album, and I like it.
Why did you pick one Yanni song and one John Tesh song?
I thought about that, but yeah. I wanted to show some Yanni diversity. I wanted to pick two sides of
Yanni diversity.
I did, yeah.
I love these catchphrases you're coming up with.
But there's some really pristine Yanni work out there, and I thought I would present it to you and your listeners. Let me give you some backstory here. This is why I even know who Yanni is. So, 1992, I grew up Mormon, you know? And in my late teens, I go on a Mormon mission. You've seen those Mormon missionaries out there on their bikes.
Yeah.
In the white shirts and ties with the black name tags and everything, and they're knocking on doors. I did that for 2 years. That's how long you could do that. And I went to Lansing, Michigan on my mission. And... the mission rule is you cannot listen to music on your mission. The only music you're allowed to listen to is church produced and instrumental. Now you can imagine someone like you and me going 2 years without listening to rock music or pop music would be really difficult.
And how old were you?
I was 18.
So 18 to 20? Wow.
20.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I could not listen to any pop music. And so what happens is you kind of start getting creative in what you can tolerate if you can only do instrumental or church-produced music. I don't really want to listen to church-produced music. So This is where my love of George Winston came from, which okay. I still stand by George Winston. He's wonderful. But so it was a lot of like, you know, Wyndham Hill collections and Narada collections. And I start paying attention to people like David Arkenstone and John Tesh and Yanni. And it's just because that's all I was really allowed to listen to. And so this would have been from 92 to 94. And so I, you know, I had some Yanni tapes, and because it was about as good as it would get. Some of the missionaries, I will tell you, if I were to do it now, I know enough about music now. I could really probably stretch the boundaries of what instrumental music I would feel okay listening to.
Well,
at the time,
I was going to ask. So, did you have like a Walkman at this point? Or?
I did, yeah. I had one of those yellow sport Walkmans.
So Who's going to know if you listen to non-instrumental music? Like, did you think you were going to go to hell if you listen to someone sing? Or
Jay, are you serious? God would know. What? It's like the dumbest question ever. Come on, God would know.
How could
I possibly perform as a spiritual disciple of our Lord and Savior.
You never broke the rule for
that. Well, I wouldn't say never. I wouldn't say that.
Well, if you break it once, then you might as well break it.
Right.
Right.
I know. I went through, I shouldn't admit any of this. God's going to strike me out before this is over. I went through some periods where I just didn't care. And I would cave a little. In fact, it was really popular at the time. There were those like Columbia House and BMG things, and missionaries get transferred to different areas every few months. And so it was kind of popular. Every time you would get transferred to a new area, you would re-sign up for Columbia House, and you'd get it like 13 free CDs, and then you'd never pay for them because a couple months later, you'd get moved to a new place. And
Columbia House, like those. Those damn Mormon missionaries, Columbia House.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So I came home with like this giant collection of CDs, but I didn't really listen to hardly any of them. And And at the time, the really sort of, kind of rebellious elders would, Joe Satriani was very big because it was instrumental. And so some people would sort of, well, hey, it's instrumental, you know, I mean, maybe it's, yeah, it's rock and roll, but I'm technically following the rules. So when I was doing my best to be obedient, Yanni was my way of keeping the rules.
Is Yanni all instrumental?
Yes. Okay. Well, yes. One of the songs I'm going to play or I'm picking has a wonderful woman, black woman, I'm guessing, singing in the background, but it's not words. She's just sort of singing, I don't know what, sounds. But
and that doesn't break the rules because it's not words, or did that break the rules?
I don't know. I mean, it didn't break the rules in my mind. You know, I didn't feel like the Holy Ghost left me in those moments when I would listen to Yanni. And that's really what the whole thing is about.
Yeah, like what if you were listening to that guy from Police Academy, what is his name, Michael Winslow, making music with his mouth? Would that break the rules? Or a beatboxing. I just listen to beatboxing CDs all day.
That's true. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, I mean, that was as creative as I could get as a, you know, an 18 to 20 year old.
That's crazy because 18 to 20, I don't think I ever listened to music more in my life than when I 18 to 20, you know?
No. And that was when, I remember, again, I shouldn't admit this, but I caved and I bought the singles soundtrack, which is still to this day one of my favorite albums ever. And I listened to it and then I would feel so guilty, and I'd put it away and I'd say, okay, I'm not listening to this again for two more years. And then I would cave a little bit and I'd listen to the single soundtrack. I finally at one point just decided, you know, I got to do this all the way. And I boxed up all my tapes. I had been collecting some tapes along the way. I boxed them all up and sent them home.
Yeah. And you're talking about like the early 90s, right? So That time before the internet, before cell phones, before smartphones, all this stuff, music was even more of a huge part, I know, of my life. Yeah. Just because there was even less distractions. So yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I know. So that's my defense of this. I don't expect anyone to like it or come away a Yanni fan. I don't honestly know that I've listened to these two songs more than maybe 3 or 4 times since I got home from my mission in 1994. Mm-hmm. But they, they were the best of what was available at the time.
So what are these? What are these Yanni songs?
So there's two. I told you I was going to sort of talk about the diversity and the breadth of Yanni. Right. Yanni's output. I picked one really upbeat song and one really pretty soft song. We'll start with the upbeat one. It's called Song for... I can't even say the words. It's called Song for Antarctica. Apparently, and I didn't know any of this. I had to look this up in order to get ready to talk to you. It was made for some kind of a movie about called Polar Shift, I believe. That's something to do with, saving Antarctica or whatever. It's a very upbeat, sweeping, kind of anthemic song that makes you feel like you're sort of an eagle, gliding along the ice. Or not that eagles glide along ice, but you're sort of soaring through the Antarctics, through these ice caps, and you're seeing beautiful things. And through it all, this black woman is singing this wordless, I don't even know what it is. She's just singing ah in the background, but it's so beautiful. And I will admit, I have sort of a soft spot for times when gospel singers are in like rock music, mm-hmm. Gospel influence on a rock song. I'm a sucker for that. And so that's kind of what this is. There's just a beautiful wordless singing going on in the background by this. I tried to look up who it was. I couldn't find it, but it's a really sweeping, anthemic, get your blood pumping kind of song. And I have to think that if you didn't know it was Yanni and you just heard it in like a, gift store in the airport or something like
elevator.
That. Right. You'd probably think it was okay. I'm guessing. On the other side of the Yanni coin is a song called To the One Who Knows. And this is a very beautiful, ballady type song. It sounds, there is some of that Yanni sweeping nature to it, but it mostly sounds, I mean, so this isn't going to resonate with you, but there are some famous, you know, sentimental movie soundtracks like Somewhere in Time or The Man from Snowy River or those kinds of things that some of us might have grown up on. Anyway, some of us listened to as children. And this song sounds like it would fit in that, you know? It's a very romantic, very lush, very beautiful song that it sounds like it would fit in a movie at just the right spot. But attaching Yanni to it, no one listening to this anyway is ever going to go listen to that. But I guarantee you, if you heard it in the background of the right movie, you wouldn't even flinch. You would think this is really lovely.
So, do you have any upcoming guests on The Hustle that you want to promote, or?
I had a feeling you would ask me that, and I like to keep my guests secret.
Okay.
I will say that I have a couple coming up, in fact, next week and a couple weeks after that, a couple of guests that I pillaged from the Double Stop. People who have appeared on the Double Stop are coming and appearing on mine.
Okay.
I have guy from an excellent R&B and funk band from the late 70s, 80s, coming up soon. I have a two-parter coming up where I interview the writer and the singer of one of the most famous, enduring new wave / power pop songs of the 80s. And I will tell you that the guy who wrote the song is a very intelligent, regular guy. The guy who sang the song is a little nuts. So,
sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So those are some of the things we're working on.
All right. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll be looking forward to it. Yeah. Everybody should check out The Hustle. It's great. I'm joined again by Joe Royland, a frequent, I guess you've been a frequent guest. I'm not sure. How many episodes have you done?
Yeah, I guess so. Handful at
yeah,
least.
Definitely,
I guess that would be frequent enough.
Yeah, definitely frequent in the future as well. Yeah. We got to meet at the Rockapod Expo. It was awesome.
One of the best days of all last year, if not my life. That was such a cool event.
Yeah, it was pretty great. Yeah, and so you're back on the show now on this special No Shame episode where I'm talking to 8 different people today, gonna do a couple tomorrow. It's gonna Hopefully I'll be able to fit all of this into one episode, but
yeah.
I'm either going to call it the No Shame Free For All or the No Shame Potluck, something like that.
I like both of those both work for me.
Yeah. So you've picked your 2 most embarrassing songs that you like. That's what I've been telling everybody. Get embarrassing.
I have. Yeah. And they have something in common. The first one, they're both by female artists. One who is probably one of, if not the biggest female artist of the 80s and 90s, and one from who is arguably probably one of the biggest female artists of today. So my first one is, it was this artist, it was her 5th single, her first top 10 hit, and it's the song Borderline by Madonna.
Thank you.
out in 1984. It was written and produced by Reggie Lucas, and basically most of the songs on her self-titled debut album, or a lot of them, were written by him, but she had her then boyfriend John Jellybean Benitez go back and remix them all.
That would be my favorite song from her first album, I think.
Yeah, it's probably my favorite song by her, period, but it was the first song by her that really caught my notice. I'm like, I like this song, but here's the odd thing. I've always heard this song in my head being done by Sammy Hagar, of all people. he seems to rock it up a bit, and he just would have the perfect voice to cover that song.
That would be very interesting to hear. Yes.
But yeah, it's a Madonna's Borderline.
So what's your next No Shame pick?
Oh, God, this is the one where I feel like I'm really going to lose my cred. But it's Taylor Swift, Blank Space, off of her, not her most recent album, her last album, 1989. And what's interesting about this song, I did like some little research on it. She was the first artist in Billboard's 56-year history of the top 100 to seed themselves for the top spot. So she knocked out, Shake It Up was the first single off that album, and that was number one, and then the next song that was number one was Blank Space. I don't know what it is about this song, it's just catchy, but it's one of those times that if I happen to be flipping through the dials and it comes on the radio, I'll just turn it on, crank it up. But one of the things I like about this song is, to me, this is the first time she actually admits that, you know, she's much publicized for her love life and all the different guys that were in it, but this is the first song where she actually admits it might not be them, it might be her. I remember sitting in my dentist's office one day with the hygienist, and a Taylor Swift song came on in the background, and she was telling me how, she said, do you listen to much Taylor Swift? And I'm like, no. And she's like, well, I've got teenage daughters, I listen to her stuff all the time, and it's always about how this guy broke her heart or that guy broke her heart. I ever wondered, do you ever think maybe it's not them, maybe it's you? Interesting cover, you know. But this is the first song where she actually admits that, hey, maybe it might be me, because in the lyrics she goes, got a long list of ex-lovers, they'll tell you I'm sane. And another part goes, because darling, I'm a nightmare just like a daydream, which is, I thought was a clever lyric. But they say it was satirically that she wrote it that way, but to me, it's like, I think she's actually being honest that maybe it is her, maybe it's not them. But it's a cool song, it's got a good hook. And the fact that Ryan Adams thought the whole, not just that tune, but the whole album in general was worth doing a cover version of, that I gave a little bit more credence in my book. But Taylor Swift, Blank Space, man. Sorry.
Well, I picked that song. I don't know which episode it was, but I like that song a lot.
In fact, I remember that one.
I like that song more. I like it more every time I hear it. Because darling, I'm a nightmare dressed like a daydream. So it's gonna be forever. Okay, well, thanks, Joe, for bearing your musical soul. You were so reticent to say the Taylor Swift song, and here I'm a big fan of it, too.
Well, I'm glad for that, at least. I was afraid I was going to lose all cred with you, and I'm like, oh, thank God.
I have no cred. Look at the songs I've picked. I'll write your name. Boys only want love if it's torture. Don't say I didn't, say I didn't warn ya. Boys only want love if it's torture. Don't say I didn't, say I didn't warn ya. All right, I'm on the line with Lee McCormick from the great Bruce Springsteen podcast, Tramps Like Us. Hey, Lee.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, BJ. What's happening?
Not much. You are here to talk about the three most embarrassing songs you like.
Yeah, I couldn't narrow down. I have a bunch of embarrassing songs. So.
Yeah, well, I've already got. I'm over 100.
And you're scraping the barrel, yeah. So. But with my three, what I went with was, you know, I love a lot of music, you know, and like, so I didn't go like anything from the 60s, 70s, 80s. because, you know, I love Neil Diamond, Cyndi Lauper, Bee Gees, disco, like some early rap. Like I could have gone that route, but so I went with like the past 20 years or so. You know, like I don't like many new bands or anything from the past 20 years. Like the newest band I like is probably the Cardigans, and their first record was 94, I think, right? So I picked from like the last 20 years, right? So the first song I picked was from 1997. So this is a song written and performed by a power trio of brothers from Tulsa, Oklahoma, right? Like the little guy looks like an Ewok, plays the drums. And then there's like a horse-faced brother on guitar. And then another brother that sings, it looks like he looks like the chick from My Two Dads, right? And their debut single went number one in 27 countries, right? So the band I'm talking about is Hanson, and their song Oombop. So man, when this song came out, like I wanted to hate it, but you know, I just couldn't help liking it. You know, like like I love scat and gibberish along to that stupid chorus. You know, that like city lap be the bop, oombop, city bop, do the bop, like all that stuff. You know, like it kind of reminds me of like the Jackson 5 a bit, like that ABC song, oh, you know, yeah. kind of a fun, you know, groove. Like he even, like the My Two Dads guy kind of sings like a young Michael Jackson too, right? Like got that pre-pubescent voice.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
But I like it. It's and when you live alone, like you sing, like I sing out loud and I, you know, talk gibberish and stuff like that, right? And I catch myself like singing this song all the time. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing, you know. Say the best that I don't know.
What's your next No Shame pick?
All right, so another terrible song. Christine Aguilera, 2006. I'm talking about the song Candyman. All right.
Oh, jeez, I'm not sure.
That's it. Have you heard this one? This is like a...
Probably, I don't remember.
Yeah, it's like Linda Perry and her wrote it. It's off that record that she produced for her. It's like a big band swing kind of Andrew Sisters... Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy ripoff kind of thing. But it's, here's the thing I like about it, DJ. It's mixed with some really good sexually metaphoric lyrics, right? And you know how much I love songs.
Oh, yeah.
Sex metaphors, yeah. And car metaphors, right?
Yeah.
So let me tell you a quick story. When I used to work on cruise ships, right? So like back in 2007, I was hanging out in the crew bar and I was getting friendly with this magician's assistant that worked on the ship too, right? And you know,
did you make anything disappear?
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah. I did. So anyway, I would show up in the crew bar like you know, dressed like a rockabilly guy, like my Danny Zuko Fonzie white T-shirt, cuffed jeans, and my hair greased back, right? And she kind of liked that look, and she would kind of come up to me and she would sing this song to me, right? And I'd never heard it. Right? So then like after the crew bar would close and we'd be a little drunk, she'd come by and knock on my door with a bottle of wine and cigarettes and her iPod. And sometimes she'd change her clothes and dress up in like this schoolgirl's outfit and stuff like that, right? So she'd come into my room.
Now I know why you like this song. Jesus Christ.
I know, right? So she'd show up to my room with her iPod, right? And she'd sing this song to me like he had tattoos up and down his arm. There's nothing more dangerous than the boy with charm. He's a one-stop shop, makes my cherry pop. You know, he's a one-stop, got the hot, making all the panties drop.
She's dancing around in the schoolgirl outfit. And
yeah, in my little cabin, right? And she's smoking cigarettes. She's like, she's a British girl, right? And she's singing it with this British accent and stuff like that, right? So every time I hear this song, I have these, you know, amazing flashbacks. So Candyman, but it's a bad song, you know. It's a bad song, but I dig it. And I really enjoy, you know, women objectifying men sexually in songs, you know, like reversing the tables, you know. So, you know, so having this song sung to me, like, many late nights by a, you know, a sexy, voluptuous blonde from England wearing a schoolgirl outfit, or, you know, sometimes less. That's the reason why I have no shame in liking this song, I'll tell you right now, DJ. So I get one more?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So another related song. This is another song that came from that sort of cruise ship era, right? Like, so when we were working, I was the drummer in the orchestra, right? So every 2 weeks, it would be like turnaround day, and that's when, like, the passengers would get off and new passengers would board. So there wasn't really much work to do. So a lot of the crew would get off, and we would get off in Barbados, and we would go party at this bar on the beach called the Boatyard. Right, so a lot of the crew would be there letting loose, all these girls like getting in bikinis, you know, and like hanging out on the beach, and like they would make good food, so just this great vibe on these beaches, right? And they would always play this song by Sean Kingston called Beautiful Girls. You know that one?
I don't know.
Sean Kingston was this guy, he was born in New York City, but then he relocated to Jamaica. And then it's like he's got this, it's one of those songs, there's like a vocoder, digital pitch correction, background vocals on it. It's about a guy who becomes suicidal over a girl because she's just too beautiful for him to handle, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, you never heard this one, eh?
Maybe if I heard it, but yeah.
It's
got that,
it's based on, the big thing is it's the music and the melody is taken from Stand By Me by Benny King.
I love that song.
So it's kind of a cool arrangement where he's taking that riff, he's putting a beat behind it, and he's kind of put a different melody on top of it, right? It's got a line of him singing, "You'll have me suicidal, suicidal." You know, this guy who's going suicidal over this girl because she's just too beautiful for him to handle, right? So,
and does he use the Stand By Me melody, you said? Or just the music?
Not really, just the music. Okay. Like, and it's, and, but he's, you know, he kind of does a little rap thing over top of it with his kind of rasta voice, and you know, it's kind of a cool song. But I would always hear this song at that Boatyard, right? Like, inevitably, I would hear it like a couple of times, you know, blasting out of these speakers, you know. And there's great food, great cocktails, beach, you know, hundreds of pretty girls in bikinis, and you know, soaking up the sun, like. Frolicking in the water, it was awesome. You know, so then like, so we would do these turnaround shows, and then like I would have to like stumble back to the ship, like usually 5 minutes before they closed the gangway, and then, you know, change my clothes and then run up to the theater and play this welcome aboard show for the new passengers, right? So just so many memories of like these great days, and you know, on the beach partying with all these cruise ship people, and lots of good times.
How much time did you spend on those cruise ships?
I did about 3 years, 3.5 years there. Like, you would go out for like 4 or 5 months, and then you would come home for, you know, a month, and then go back out and stuff. So it was a lot of fun, a lot of good memories. But you know, you're living in a closet with a dude sometimes. You know, you're sharing bunk beds, and it's really closed quarters. But you know, lots of fun to be had. Plus, I was the drummer in the band, right? So I didn't even work that much. Do a rehearsal like 5 to 6 p.m. And then we would do 2 shows, like 8 to 9 and 10 to 11. And that's it. The rest of the time, I'm either on the beach or in the gym or sleeping or partying or good times.
We should point out, as long as I have you on the show, that I used to always use the drum fills from Rip It Out as like the closing music of the podcast. But then we played Rip It Out at the Rockapod Expo with you on drums and me on guitar, yeah. And now that's what I use. I replaced God. It.
I love it, man. I'm flattered. I'm very honored.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I love it too. It's awesome.
Yeah, it sounds good, man. No rehearsal. We pulled it off.
Yeah, we did. We did a good job on that one. Yeah. Yeah. So that's awesome. That I used that since the very first episode, anyways. But now it's actually us playing it. Yeah. What it's.
So.
Gary Schaller's on that, and Brian Sword, too.
That's right.
Yeah, it's awesome. Beautiful girls, they only wanna do you dirt, they'll have you suicidal.
suicidal, suicidal.
Okay, I'm on the line with former podcaster Craig Cohen. I was planning on cracking that joke.
Well, you know what? There's a lot of truth in that.
I'm such a fan of your work, so I'd love to hear more, hear you get back in the saddle, because truly, I love the Slycast. I've listened to those episodes more than once, just because there aren't new ones, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so much fun to listen to.
Yeah, I'm anxious to get back into it, too. And I'm also, you know, I know I've put on hiatus almost as soon as it started was the Big Screen Book Club, but I can't wait to sit down with you and talk more books that have been adapted into movies.
Yeah, so that was such a fun idea. Because, yeah, I should say, you were in the Rock Andor Roll feed heavily last month in October, because three of the four episodes that I put up were dominated pretty much by you.
I appreciated that, and I'll tell you, that Runaway was such a blast from the past, and I forgot how much fun we had. I remember that being a really, really fun recording, but listening back and that the whole scene with the robot that was making the shotgun noise.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, and then talking about if the robot was in the bathroom.
How did it open the door? And...
And then what's his problem with the guy that just lost his wife?
Yeah, the cameraman. Yeah. The guy's wife is dead and his baby is being held hostage. And the cameraman's like, what's his problem? His wife is just laying like 10 feet away, her dead body.
That really was. I mean, I had so much fun listening back to that. And there were just so many times where I had to just hit pause so I could finish laughing.
I remember quite a few people when that came out commenting that it was their favorite episode of the podcast ever. Yeah, and but what we did is we just modeled it after the Slycast, so it was great. Right. Except, yeah. We were making fun of it a lot more than you guys make. Well, I guess you've done a few episodes where you were doing a lot of making fun, probably, like Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, and what's the comedy, is it Oscar?
Oscar. Snap Provolone. Yeah, and sadly, once we get back up and running, we're in a period of career where it's about to get really brutal. With some really, really terrible movies. So as much as I want to get back on that horse, I know it's a really, really rough path we have to go down before we get back to the quality stuff.
You got to slog through some stuff to get to Copland, probably, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, those books, Big Screen Book Club episodes, I was going to look and see how – I know they're both up to over like 600 downloads now.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. That's more people than listened the first time around.
Yeah, and those are great episodes. I mean, it's so much fun to do. And yeah, I just just in the process of moving, I had to pack my books and put them on the shelf at the new house. And I've got like Death Wish. I remember we were going to do Death Wish, and that's really interesting too because of the contrast from the book to the movie. Because I read the book back when we were talking about it, and I just bought. Just recently, I bought Deliverance and Jaws.
Jaws is funny because I know that Jeff Ferry I thought would be on board for Jaws, and he never even wants to think about that book again. I think I asked my brother about Jaws, and he wasn't too keen on it. If and when you read that book and you feel like that's something you want to tackle, I'd love to, because that's one where I think the discussion can be really, really, really good, because there's some substantial differences.
Oh, cool. And also, I recently watched the documentary about the shower scene in Psycho, and then I went on eBay.
And got the book?
Yeah, I bought an old copy, a cool old copy of the book that was like originally like 45 cents, pre-movie. Yeah. It was only a few bucks, too, and so now I got that sitting on my shelf, too. So, if you're ever going to get Big Screen Book Club up running again, it's tons of fun. It's a great idea, a great concept and everything. So, all right, so speaking of great concepts, we're here to talk No Shame, where you've picked a couple of the most embarrassing songs that you like. So you want to tell us your first pick?
Yeah, sure. Well, thank you for inviting me on. So I had so many songs that I wanted to or could have included here, but I narrowed it down to two that I think are extra worthy. And the first one is from 1976, right at the dawn of disco. And it's by a band, I believe it's pronounced the Silvers, and it's Hotline.
The Silvers with a Y, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I might know that song if I heard it, but I can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to attempt to sing it.
Yeah, right.
That could be used against me. But, it's one of those things where, like, disco is almost, I think, sort of a cheap choice because it's designed to do nothing but get in your head and stay there. And it's funny how disco sort of evolved from, like legitimate like soul music or R&B that really had like a heart to it, and then it just became like this mechanical, you know, almost repetitious, you know the disco formula was, you know, like, you know, set the click track to 120 beats a minute, record everything separately, you know, have the, you know, the bass lines, you know, that sort of just thump along, and it was designed to make people dance, so it's
drugs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny, I've been singing this song at work all week, you know, because I was preparing for this episode and I got it in my boss's head, and he said he thought it was the type of song you would hear at like a department store.
You've been singing it at work all week, but you can't sing it on the show.
All right, I'll give it a shot if you want. Basically, the hook of the song is hotline, hotline. Call me on the hotline.
Okay.
For your love. Hotline, hotline. Call me on the hotline. For your love, for your love. Hotline, hotline. Call me on the hotline.
Sounds familiar. I'm sure I'll know it when I hear it.
Let's see it. Peaked in early 77 at number 5 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart.
Okay.
And it ended up being the 25th biggest hit of 1977. So yeah, that's my song, and I'm sure when you go back and listen to it, it'll be stuck in your head for about 4 days.
All right.
Yeah. And my second song is probably the most shameful one for me, and I really, really thought it hard about including it, but it's from 2002, and it's John Mayer, the No Such Thing, which is the one where he sings about running through the halls of his high school.
Oh. Man, yeah, I am not a John Mayer fan, but okay, so this one is, which one is that? I'm sure I know it.
Yeah, I guess it was maybe, it either came out right before or right after Your Body is a Wonderland, and he sings in the, like, you know, it's a song about getting out of high school and looking forward to the rest of your life, and then he sings about wanting to go back to his reunion, and he's gonna bust down the double doors. And
is that the song where it says like "top of my lungs" and something about the real world?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah. See, my real issue with John Mayer is just the way he sings. I couldn't listen to any song where he sings like that. It just drives me nuts.
Ugh. Yeah, same here. But that song, for some reason, it came on the radio the other morning when I was driving to work, and I'd already chosen it for this episode, and you know, it was a nice little coincidence, but I was like, this is a song when it comes on the radio that I don't turn off. And you know, it's, you know, that's a good way to judge whether or not you like a song. And it's funny because I probably couldn't name, you know, another John Mayer song other than the two that we just talked about. And you know, I don't really care for him as an artist, and it doesn't even seem like he's that good of a person.
No. Well, and somehow he got this rep of being some amazing guitar player, which, I don't know. I mean, whatever. Who cares? Yeah. There's a lot of good guitar players. I don't know. I mean, he had a lot of success.
Yeah, and then he went into, like, stand-up comedy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And then he started doing stand-up comedy, I think.
Well, I could say one good thing about John Mayer is that when it was when the Ice Bucket Challenge was a big thing, I think. And, you know, what's his name?
Right.
Jason, the guy who was David Lee Roth's guitarist. And then
Jason Becker.
Jason Becker, yeah. So John Mayer learned a whole Jason Becker song and played it and put it on YouTube. And like as a tribute to Jason Becker, you know, like when the Ice Bucket Challenge was going on, ALS was it big in the news.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. I hadn't heard that. I'm going to have to look for that.
Yeah, so that was a really cool thing that he did. Because I'm sure Jason Becker really appreciated that. And yeah, so that was cool. But that way he sings, whatever, I don't even know how to describe it, but I can't stand it.
No, it's really like, it almost seems like he's singing from the very, very, very back of his mouth, like in between his, like where his mouth ends and his throat starts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Just a lie, got to rise above. I just can't wait till my 10-year reunion. I'm gonna bust down the double doors. And when I stand on these tables before you, you will know what all this time was for. All right, I'm on the line with Jason Radke, who is a... Hello, Jason.
Hello.
And I don't know, when did you start listening? You comment a lot on Facebook, but I don't know if you've been a longtime listener, or I don't remember when you showed up on the fan page.
Yeah, it seems like you'd only had, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 episodes out. And that's when I was just getting into podcasts, and I'm like, I need some rock and roll podcast. Find me some new good music. And I'll say I found it on your podcast.
Yeah, so you just searched like rock and roll on iTunes or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beyond Pod is my podcaster that I use.
Okay.
And you're one of the ones that showed up, and I thought, well, that looks good. Let's try that.
Cool. And you have your own podcast called Nerd Therapy. You want to tell us about that?
I do. It's a actual play podcast. Me and a group of international friends are playing a D&D campaign and recording as we go. We've got people from Norway, Scotland, Britain, Phoenix, Arizona, which is, you know, really exotic.
And the way I understand Dungeons & Dragons, there's a dungeon master, is that right? Who just
right.
makes up the story as you go?
Yeah.
Okay.
He either makes up the story or he runs one of the pre-made modules.
Right.
RDM is running his own story, but I've done some one-shots where I've just ran some modules for the group.
So modules are like pre-written stories or maybe an outline of a story or something?
Right, a pre-written story.
Okay.
And I bring their characters through it.
And so you said a campaign, so is this like one long Dungeons & Dragons game that's going on over the course of all these episodes, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Our DM's pretty inventive. He's really good. Basically lets us do whatever we want and try and fail on our own. Recently, one of our tanks punched out a house, which was a lot of fun.
Okay. I guess the most recent kind of high-profile exposure for Dungeons & Dragons was in Stranger Things. Huh? A lot of people probably are familiar with it, just maybe even just from that.
Yeah, we're kind of in a new golden age of RPGs. I follow Geek and Sundry on Facebook and stuff, and they're always posting about, you know, new Kickstarter for this type of RPG. And I mean, name a property, somebody's made up an RPG for it.
With the internet, I guess any niche thing you're looking for, there's plenty of it out there.
Right? Yeah, and then there's a porn parody for it.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a funny play on Dungeons and Dragons, but it's not coming to me.
Dungeons and Drag Queens?
Yeah, there you go. So you're on Skype with me today to reveal... It's supposed to be the two most embarrassing songs that you like. That's what I keep stressing to everyone is get the most embarrassing here. But, you know, with so many episodes of No Shame now, so many songs have been covered that it's kind of getting ridiculous.
Right.
But somehow we still keep coming up with new ones. So.
Yeah, I think I've picked a couple good ones.
All right. So you want to get started? What's your first pick for No Shame?
My first pick, Welsh singer Bonnie Tyler. Don't worry, I'm not going Total Eclipse of the Heart, even though I love that song. But it's off the same album, Faster Than the Speed of Night. It's the title track to it. And I swear, if you haven't heard the song, go listen to it. It's got Max Weinberg on drums, Rick Derringer on guitar. And Weinberg just kills it on this song. I listen to it half the time just to hear his drums.
And who wrote that song? Do you know?
That's Jim Steinman.
He wrote that one too. Did he write most of that album? Or
actually, most of the album is covers. There's some CCR. There's some Blue Oyster Cult. He only actually wrote two songs on the album. Oh, okay. But listen for Holly Sherwood's vocals at the end. She does this nice little wail that really high note she hits, and every time I hear it, I'm just like, oh, God, that's got to hurt.
All right, Bonnie Tyler. Somebody probably picked her at some point. I don't remember if anybody ever picked Total Eclipse of the Heart or not.
Yeah, I figured that one was probably gone, so I picked my second most shameful song off that album, and that was it. My next pick is a little more obscure. I don't know if you know British opera singer Louise Tucker.
No, I don't. Not off the top of my head.
Back in 1982, she was discovered by Tim Smith when she came with her sister-in-law to help babysit his kids. And he decided right then and there he was going to record with her. They did a song called Midnight Blue, not the Lou Gramm song. This is a different Midnight Blue. And then they recorded a whole album with the same name. Did really well, surprisingly. I think it even charted here in the States back in 82 or 83. I remember it from when I was a kid, being at my aunt's farm, and that was the year that song came out, and it seemed like it was that one and Taco's Putting on the Ritz they kept playing those two over and over where I was staying.
So it's an opera singer who made a pop album? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's synth pop, which okay. I'm not usually a big fan of, but for some reason I just love this song. I don't know if it's the connection to my youth and good memories or if it's just because it's a pretty phenomenal song. Night. It's actually a duet with let me look at the guy's name here. Charlie Scarbeck. She did it's a duet with him, and it's actually in the tune in the background. You'll recognize it probably. It's Beethoven's Sonata Pathétique, and it somehow it fits. I love it.
Okay, I'm on the line with Jennifer Chose. This is your second appearance on the show. You were on the 200th episode, right? So,
that's right.
And I think on that episode you mentioned that you liked the No Shame episodes. So here you are. Yep. You get to participate in not having any shame. So so welcome back to Rock and or Roll. And I guess you picked your two most embarrassing songs to share with us.
I did. It was hard to narrow it down to two.
Yeah. Yeah, I've narrowed it down to, what, over 100 by now, since I've had to make so many lists.
Wow.
Luckily for this episode, I don't have to make my own list.
Yeah, I feel like one was easy and like 10 was easy, but two was really hard somehow.
Okay.
But I got it done.
All right, so what's your first pick for No Shame?
Okay, I'm a little nervous, so I picked this one. This is an easy one because I'm kind of like shame, no shame about this entire genre, which is freestyle, which is that sort of like 80s pop dance music that came out of Miami and the Bronx. So like some of the big artists were like Lisa Lisa and the Cult Jam and Exposé. So I've got one from Exposé, and it's called Let Me Be the One.
Are Exposé, you know, are they the...
They're the all-girl band from Miami.
I think I picked an Exposé song that I thought was a Selena song, right? Are they the ones? I'll Never Get Over You Getting Over Me. Is that them?
I think so. I mean, I didn't really know that song. The other big hit that they had was like Seasons Change.
Okay. Okay, Let Me Be the One. So, was that a hit?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I think it charted with the rest of their songs on that record.
Okay.
And the thing is I really like hated this music when it came out because I was more into, you know, rock and roll.
Yeah.
But, you know, I grew up in Miami. I'm not there anymore. So now I have kind of a soft spot for all things Miami. So I kind of picked up with the freestyle movement again. And, I really love this song.
Exposé or freestyle, okay. And it's like a Miami thing?
Yeah, but there's arguments. A lot of people say it started in the Bronx, but there's also arguments that you could say it started in Miami. It's like dance music.
Right.
Very electronic. It's really bad, actually. But but I really love it.
And what year? What year is that song? Probably what, mid '80s or something?
87. Okay. It's funny. I looked into the song a little bit, and it turns out that it was written by Mary J. Blige. So
really?
I was like, oh, maybe it's not as bad as I think.
Yeah, it's so. Yeah, 87. That's pretty early for her, right? 87.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Yeah.
Because I don't know when she came out, but it seems like it was in the 90s to me, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, same.
She was probably really young when she wrote that then. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I like the lyrics. It's just like, it's just very like, kind of like drippy and desperate and like overly female, but not usually what I go for. But I don't know, there's like a lot of commitment to the vocals, and I just think it's just good vocal performance. I like it. So my other one is from an artist that I've always loved since I was a kid, and that's Olivia Newton-John. And this is a song from a movie, Two of a Kind, and the song is called Twist of Fate.
Twist of Fate?
Yeah.
And that's that's another movie with John Travolta, right?
Yep. It's like a very 80s like soundtracky song, and I think it's very exciting.
80s soundtrack, he sounds good to me.
And I feel like she even gets like a little angry a couple times, which, you know, for her is, you know, not that angry, but I enjoy that.
Awesome, yeah. Angry Olivia Newton-John. I don't know if there's any Olivia Newton-John song that I can think of that I even really like. So it'd be good to find one.
Yeah, you'll have to see if this one kind of changes your mind. I was even a member of a fan club when I was a kid.
You were a member of the Olivia Newton-John fan club?
Totally. See, I'm really revealing things and embarrassing myself right now.
Didn't her boyfriend fake his death or something like that? In the 2000s?
I love that.
No. Yeah, I think she had like a boyfriend that staged like falling off a boat and disappearing, and then it turned out he was still alive. And she thought he was dead or something. I think that.
I hope he didn't do that like to get away from her or something. That's terrible.
Oh, it's probably. I mean, I'm guessing he had like debts. He was trying to get away from her, something like that. More than.
Oh.
I don't remember.
Without the love you bring, love is what we found. The second time that it's gotta be a strange twist of fate.
Okay, so I'm on the line with Steve Wright from the Potter Than Hell podcast. Hey, Steve, how's it going?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, good. So you do Potter Than Hell. Were you at the Rock and Pod Expo?
Yes.
Okay. Right, but you guys.
We didn't have a table or anything.
Yeah, you guys got in too late to.
Yeah. We started like maybe a month before the expo because we weren't really sure if we were going to be able to go. But like we were kind of last minute to just even attend, let alone get a table done.
So you were there, but did I meet you? I was in such a daze for a lot of it.
I think I did. I think I introduced myself and we shook hands. But there were so many people there and we met so many people. It was hard to keep track of who we actually talked to.
I know. I look back and I was like, what the hell was I doing? I wish I would have met more people and talked to more people, but it was all kind of a daze and, you know.
Yeah. Well, now we have one under our belt, so like everyone that was there at least will have, you know, an idea what it's, you know, going to kind of be like next year. So, you know, I'm pretty sure they'll do what I hope they do.
Yeah, I haven't, I've been meaning to message Chris. We haven't talked about it lately, but I was just going to message him and say, hey, like after the holidays, maybe we should jump into, you know, figuring out what we're going to do next year. But, so Potter Than Hell sounds like it's a Kiss podcast. I haven't checked your show out yet, but it's not a Kiss podcast, right?
It's not. We do a lot of Kiss topics on there, and my son is our engineer kind of guy. He does all the technical stuff, and he always busts my ass because he always usually times me to see how long it takes me to bring up Kiss. So we do include Kiss in every episode in one way or another, unless we have an interview, which, you know, we've had a lot of cool ones of them so far. And actually, I just scored a freaking awesome interview today. So, but, yeah, we're not Kiss. And we kicked around a bunch of names, and that was pretty much what we came up with. It was the only one that everyone, we were like, hey, that's, you know.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I do my show by myself, so I don't have to have any consensus going
all
on.
Right. Yeah, well, I have me. My son does the... does all our technical stuff, and then I have two co-hosts also.
Yeah.
So we get kind of busy sometimes, but
were all three of you at the Rock and Pod?
No, just two of us, just okay. Myself and BC. The other guy, we brought him in later on.
Okay. What are some of the interviews you've done?
We had an interview with Dakota Denman from Denman that we saw
awesome.
There. We just did Sean Duncan from DC4. His brother is Jeff Duncan that is in Armored Saint. Carl Kennedy we did. He is he's a drummer for the Rods, and he's a producer. He produced the first two Anthrax albums, and he's produced Overkill and all those, and those guys. And he's actually the guy that got Joey Belladonna into Anthrax.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my first pick is going to be Copacabana from Barry Manilow. See, there you go. And, I've always liked that song, and because my mom had the records in the house when we were growing up, and you know I didn't really have access to record stores or funds to buy records, and you know I listened to those albums and Elvis and everything, and that song always just had a cool beat to it, and it just, you know, the story of it is kind of cool, and that's one. It's just I hear that, and actually I took my wife to see Barry Manilow. She's a huge fan of his for one of our, I think for her birthday the one year. And he's a great entertainer. You know, he here's a guy that knows his audience. He said after a couple songs, welcome everybody. And welcome to a great night of passionate music. All you lovely ladies out there and the husbands and boyfriends that got dragged along. Now there's a guy that knows his audience.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm that guy. But it was a great show. It was just, he was a great entertainer. Entertainment is, you know, if you're good, you're good.
I can handle some Barry Manilow songs, but not that one.
Oh, really?
His name was Rico. He wore a diamond. He was escorted to his chair. He saw Lola dancing there. And when she finished, he called her over. But Rico went a bit too far. Tony sailed across the bar, and then the punches flew, and chairs were smashed in two. There was blood and a single gunshot, but just who shot who at the Copa? Copacabana, the hottest spot north of Havana.
Okay, so what's so Copacabana is definitely a very shameful pick. So good job.
It is. I'm hanging my head low right here as I'm talking to you. And my second one is the song "Summer Nights" from the Grease soundtrack. You know, one of those songs that just, I don't know, it always just kind of, I liked it because we were listening to that, and I remember the Grease soundtrack, which I still listen to occasionally. And I remember when we were kids, when that was first out, we used to do little routines singing in front of our family and stuff like that. And I remember when we were doing Grease Lightning, and it was like, you know, it goes like the shit, and you'll get lots of tit or something like that, it says. And our parents were like, oh my God, like freaking out.
Yeah.
But Summer Nights was cool, and you know, and it's funny too, because like the only part I hate is when John Travolta does that I can't even, I'm not even going to try to imitate it, that Summer Nights at the end. It's just like, oh my God, it's like glass is going to break.
Yeah, I don't think I like that song either. All right, well, those are a couple of pretty good No Shame picks right there. Copacabana. Okay, well, thanks for talking to me. And
all right, no problem. And let me know when that's going to be out, and I'll check it out. Actually, I'm going to go back through and check out the other episodes and stuff, and hopefully we can do something again. We can even have you on our show some one of these times.
Sure, anytime, man. Okay, I'm on the line with Douglas Levi, which I asked you if it was pronounced Levy or Levy, and it's neither. Mm-hmm. I never would have guessed that. And I guess, get, so how long have
I
you
get
been?
Levy all the time.
Yeah, you
Sorry,
must.
I get Levy. Yeah, I get Levy, Levy, Levi sometimes.
Just
I'm
never,
used to it.
Never Levi.
No, just on a fluke.
So how long have you been listening to Rock and or Roll?
I'd say about 3 years or so, and I really love the podcast. It's one of my favorite music-based podcasts. I've listened to every single No Shame episode, so it's a real honor and privilege to be on this one. And I'm just an avid podcast listener. I don't host anything. I just love listening to them. They, you know, to paraphrase Kells, they are audio fanzines, and as someone who grew up reading a lot of fanzines, I really love the spirit that comes from the fans who actually listen to what they're talking about, you know, not these elitist critics from, you know, Rolling Stone or Spin. I love just listening to the everyday fans, you know, and your show is great, so it's a real honor, privilege to be included in this one. You know, I really love, you know, thrash, speed, death metal, you know, Kiss, Priest, Maiden, Motorhead, Sabbath, Venom, the Big Four, and then the newer breed like Amon Amarth, Gorguts, Hatebreed, you know, the people who are kind of keeping the flag going there. And I also really, really like a good song. A good song is a good song, no matter what the genre or the singer or the popularity is. For example, I've got a mix CD that at one point you hear the live version of Sodom's Blasphemer, which is a real super heavy thrasher, and I've always loved Sodom. The song that follows that is Melissa Manchester, You Should Hear How She Talks About You. I mean, talk about one extreme to the other, but they're great, you know? I really also love lounge and cocktail music, you know, like what's found on the Capitol Records Ultra Lounge series. There's just something about, you know, the mirth and the gaiety and just the structure of these instrumentals that have always attracted me. But what I really, really love are those 70s AM gold things. You know, these shimmering pop gems that I grew up listening to, stuff that you don't always hear on, you know, the 70s channel. We're talking about, like, really deep cuts. And about 20 years ago, I bought the whole 25 CD set from Rhino called Super Hits of the 70s, Have a Nice Day. And each of these CDs has 12 songs on it. It's kind of like one of those, you know, K-Tel records. You remember those growing up?
Yeah, I know those Have a Nice Day CDs. I used to check them out from the library, all of those. Yeah.
Yeah, just real deep cuts. And what I've really, you know, cheesy as they are today, I just think they're great because each song was really like a story. You know, like Chevy Van, Run Joey Run, Brandy You're a Fine Girl, Billy Don't Be a Hero, Seasons in the Sun, and just the arrangements in there. It wasn't really synthesized. I mean, what you heard were really, you know, actual musicians playing, no auto-tune, no nothing. And to hear just the craft of it is great. And, you know, to sing along and dance is great too, I mean, and whatnot. So those are the kinds of things that I say I have shame about.
Wasn't that Tony Burrows? I'd say, that Tony Burrows CD was a part of that set too, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I love
that.
I love it.
Yeah, he was in you know, Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes.
Yeah, Edison Lighthouse.
The Edison Lighthouse, and a lot of people didn't really know about that song until Quentin Tarantino featured it, or at least said that in Reservoir Dogs. And
I love that song.
There's just so much in there, and then he was part of First Class for Beach Baby, and then I think it was the Pipkins with
Give Me That Ding.
Give Me That Ding. Yeah, and then My Baby Loves Love, and it's just wild. You know?
There's those. There's a couple of Tony Burrows solo songs that are so great. Melanie Makes Me Smile, and what's that other one that I love? I don't remember off the top of my head, but yeah, that's a great CD of all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and I bought, you know, all of them. I had to have that. Where, you know, I wish I had a jukebox, one of those CD jukeboxes where I could just have them all play there, you know, to bring me back to my childhood and all of that. So when it comes to my No Shames, I would say the first one is really the quintessential 70s song for me, and it's It Don't Matter to Me by Bread. I've always admired Bread for how they're able to put a lot of tenderness and emotion into what they do. And just enough of it where it doesn't become overly cloying or too thick. I mean, they kind of understand what Paul Stanley said about writing a good song or coming up with a good guitar solo. He says, it's not about the notes you play, it's about the notes you don't play. You know, knowing the difference between just enough and over the top. And with It Don't Matter to Me, you've got a song that's less than 3 minutes long, and it doesn't waste a second of its time, and it doesn't take up too much of its time. It gets in there, it gets the job done. It's really a wonder with this mix of narrative, melancholy, and pathos, and just enough of each. The way you hear such studio perfection throughout is something else too. I mean, these four musicians in the beginning stanza, it really sounds like they're just all together, a clean sound, and then there's a light strings in the bridge that, you know, kind of zips through. You know, not a lot of people have an ego hang up because they want to be the only one, that part. And then the strings that just kind of kick in the ending section. And by the end of that song, when they sing It Don't Matter to Me one last time, while the guitar lightly kind of glazes, you're smiling and you want to hear it again. And that's really the true mark of a great song, no matter if it's, you know, Shame or No Shame, if you want to immediately listen to it again. Because it was just that great, and that it just does that for me every single time. And anybody who says that Bread is all sappy and lovey-dovey, you know, they're really not looking too much into what they were about. I mean, Bread had some actual heavier songs that they did. Listen to, you know, part of Anthology of Bread, the song Down on My Knees is a rocker. It's rollicking and everything, but this song, It Don't Matter to Me, is just perfection. And I've got no shame in admitting that. It don't matter to me. It don't matter to me. 'Cause there'll always be an empty room waiting for you. An open heart waiting for you. Time is on my side. The second one for me is ABBA with Take a Chance on Me. And here's the thing. Everybody likes ABBA. everybody, and or maybe I should say that everybody likes at least one ABBA song, and not everybody wants to admit that. But I kind of think they're sort of like the Beatles and Elvis to me. They have this universal appeal and really a universal respect. I mean, even Fozzy, you know, Chris Jericho's band, did a version of SOS, and I think it's just great. Now, Take a Chance on Me really gets me smiling from the get-go when the ladies sing, "If you change your mind," and then Benny and Bjorn come right in with, "Take a chance, take a chance, take a chance, chance." And just hearing this a cappella is just... You're just, at first you're just kind of stunned, and then you're just kind of like, you know, melting into it. And then when the rhythm kicks in, this keyboard that kind of weaves around like a carousel, and this steady rhythm of the drum, it's almost hypnotic. I mean, it's just, ABBA kind of does that. Maybe they were just perhaps the best quartet out there, you know, next to the Beatles and Kiss in terms of, and just really using the sum of their parts to make something great. So that's this. I'm really looking forward to hearing everybody else in No Shame for... just keep doing what you're doing. I'm really looking forward to, you know, meeting you guys at the Rock and Pod Expo next year. I'm hoping that's the case. And just keep weaving that magic. I really love what you're doing. In fact, when you ran that replay of the Headbangers Ball, I felt like I was 18 all over again. You know, I probably even saw that episode you played too.
Oh, yeah.
And look back, it's just like, you know, what was I thinking at the time, you know? But it's real fun. You got some real fun stuff. And to all the other podcasts out there who, you know, you guys listen to this, you know, you guys are great. You've got a lot of fans out there. And rock on.
All right, so returning guest to Rock and or Roll, Terry Means. We did a great Worst of Kiss episode previously. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I always like having my 2 cents in on the Kiss episodes.
Yeah. And so now you're back to reveal the two most embarrassing songs that you like. So.
Yeah, I've it's funny. Again, I found it quite challenging because I don't carry a lot of shame with the crap that I love in life. I actually like to rub it in people's faces, but
yeah.
You know, there was definitely a time in the 80s when I was a young man where I'd show you all my thrash metal records, but you couldn't see my Smiths records that were under the bed. But no shame about that now or anything.
Yeah, that's like the theme. That's been a common theme, is you weren't allowed to like stuff like when you were a teenager. You kind of had to hide it. A lot of people felt like they had to hide some of the stuff they liked just because of whatever. But
right.
I remember when we caught my friend Paul had the Permanent Vacation cassette hidden in his like his sock drawer. Me and my friend Dan found it, and he was hiding it from us.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. All right, so what's your number? What's your first No Shame pick?
Oh, man. You know, like I said, I worked in a record store. Everybody knows I'm a huge music snob, so... I have no shame with Love and Adam and the Ants and the Plasmatics and Dexys and all that stuff along with my other stuff. But if people truly knew that I loved Kelly Clarkson since you've been gone, I might lose some cool points.
You've been gone, and all you'd ever hear.
I agree. That's a really good song.
She was, yeah, there's not a time that that comes on that I don't love it.
She was just on Howard Stern recently, and did you hear that? Do you happen to do this on Howard Stern?
Or? I do, but I didn't hear that one, no.
Yeah, because I know that there was a story where she said she didn't want to do that song or something, and she clarified that it's because the demo that Max Martin gave her sucked, and then they could play, like, completely reworked the song to make it like a Pat Benatar, like a rock song. So I would love to hear what the demo was, but apparently the demo was a very different song than what how it ended up. So
yeah, that's really interesting. It's an odd thing because I could literally not tell you anything else she ever recorded or sang. But yeah, that song is just, I love that song. I always have.
I've always thought it sounded like a Pat Benatar song, really, you know.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely. Yeah. She has an amazing voice. There's no doubt about it. But I'm always a sucker for a female singer that has some guitar in the back. Yeah, you can't go wrong, ever.
Yeah, no, that's a good song.
My next No Shame, I'm not very shameful, but I'll tell you, my wife loves to bring this up to people, and it can be somewhat embarrassing. She just loves it because I am that music snob who, you know, but she'll always throw it in there, and it's always somewhat embarrassing. But yeah, ABBA, Dancing Queen, love it. I think it, something about the way the song's composed, it's got a lot of fills in there, a lot of fills. It's a great song. It is a great song, and I get constant grief about it, that's for sure.
That's the ABBA disco song.
And I don't care for any of their other catalog hits or anything, but...
Really?
Yeah, no.
See,
no,
I
no.
love a lot of ABBA songs, but Dancing Queen's not one of my favorites.
Yeah, there's just something about... I think it's composed and produced amazingly. Yeah. Yeah, it puts some fills in you when you hear it. And it's funny because it almost strikes me as kind of a morose, sad song, but I guess it's anything but that. But ABBA, yeah, can't go wrong, right?
Oh, they have some amazing songs. Okay, well, thanks a lot, Terry, for coming on and bearing your musical soul.
Oh, man. I feel better already.
Dancing queen, young and sweet, only
be back. Don't put this part in the show, but the magician's assistant, she was engaged to the magician at the time, too.
Come on, why can't I put that in the show? How about I put it after the end credits?
Yeah, all right, yeah, sure.